Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, whenever you're listening to the Alan Nathan Show, which is 5 days a week. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And he would like you to know that we want the Democrats out of our bedrooms, the Republicans out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. Boy, the limited government issues, they're just coming fast and furious, to coin a phrase. And we're going to be talking about that and so much more. We open the show today with our very first guest, founding board member, executive director, and chief communications officer at Patriot Mobile Action, a Texas PAC focused on keeping Texas red. She was named 2022 as a top five power player in North Texas by Axios. And she's been a tireless leader in conservative politics for over 30 years, featured on outlets such as Fox and Friends and in the National Review and the Daily Caller. Lee Wamsgans joins us right now on the Alan Nathan Show. Hi, Lee. Good to have you back again.
Hi, Karen. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Boy, I'm so glad to hear that our second biggest state so far, unless Canada becomes a state, that's for another time, is working hard to keep it conservative. People know that there are a lot of threats to that in Texas, so I'm glad. I want to jump right ahead to the cabinet picks. You have some thoughts on that. What is there any way to stop this insurgent, I guess is the word, Democrats from slow walking these cabinet picks? What can we do to get them not only to approve these cabinet picks, because that's what the people asked for? Trump has a mandate, and stop slow walking them.
Trump definitely has a mandate. And of course, the Democrats are doing what Democrats do, right? It's really interesting how they turn on their own so quickly. Here we have a bipartisan candidate with Kennedy who does want to make America healthy again. And he has a lot of good points that Republicans agree with. And those points, you know, he's not very pro-life, but he has also said he would serve at the will of the president. And so, you know, things like, you know, the red dye that's been chosen, proven carcinogens for decades that other countries don't allow, they're already starting to outlaw it here. Here in Texas, I think probably one of the leaders we're most excited about is Border Czar Tom Homan, you know, because in Texas, we're on the front lines of this invasion.
Lost you there for a minute. And so do you think the cabinet picks are going to get through, or which ones are you most afraid of?
Well, what it's looking like, I mean, I do think Kennedy is going to get through. The Tulsi Gabbard is getting the most. I think that one is probably most in danger. But I don't know if you caught me before your technical difficulty, but in Texas, we're most excited about the Trump Border Czar Tom Homan. Already in Texas, thanks to President Trump, ICE is now arresting criminal illegal aliens in Texas. And, you know, we are on the front lines of this invasion. We've been here for years. Texas authorities have seized enough deadly fentanyl, over 500 million lethal doses. That's enough to kill every man, woman, and child in America. That should be a bipartisan issue. Sadly, it's not. Here in Tarrant County, where we live, and by the way, Tarrant County is the largest red county in the nation with 2.3 million people. We're larger than 15 states. And even being the largest red county in the nation, our Tarrant County authorities literally found women in cages during a cartel bust. And this deadly Trinidad Aragua gang has been terrorizing our Texas citizens, taking over Texas apartment complexes. And yesterday in Governor Abbott's address, he mentioned that they are made a priority for them to be weeded out and taken out of Texas, to get them out of the population. You know, they spread like weeds, and to just to take them out, literally seek and destroy their capability to harm Texans.
I got a couple questions on that. There's so much to talk to you about. A lot of people are marveling at the fact that these deportations of criminal illegal aliens, the gang members, both in Aurora and Texas, Aurora, Colorado, and other places in Texas and around the country, happened so quickly because we knew where they were, right?
Right.
Otherwise, how could it happen so quickly?
Well, it's really hard to fight. The federal government is the one that's equipped and funding to fight terrorism. However, in lieu of the open borders of Biden's 4 years, Texas had to step up and spend our own money to do it. Governor Abbott started Operation Lone Star, and they have put a lot of efforts into that. But listen, we need the feds. We need backup. We needed the things that President Trump is doing right now, like enabling our state guard to arrest and deport criminal illegal aliens, to give our sheriff's departments and our law enforcement on the street the abilities to do the law enforcement things they need to do to keep their various communities safe. And, in Abbott's speech yesterday, he had the mother and sister of a young lady who was brutally raped and murdered by an illegal alien who had done similar heinous crimes before, but was let go in our country. And
wow.
Not even talking crime in Texas. In Texas alone, the illegal alien crisis is costing Texans over $13 billion a year. This is law-abiding, lifelong Texas citizens. They're being taxed out of their homes because of criminal illegal aliens. And Operation Lone Star documented over more than 11 million people verified to have crossed our border during the Biden administration's open border policies. And that's just the documented ones. You know, the gotaways are at least four times that. 11 million, you know, only eight states have more than 11 million people in them. Texas has 31 million. That's a third of our state. And again, not including the gotaways. Now, Governor Abbott in August did an executive order requiring our public hospitals to start counting the financial impact of illegal aliens on our public hospitals, because federal law requires public hospitals to serve regardless of immigration status. Order just went into effect in November. So that $13 billion, I'm telling you, doesn't even include the massive healthcare costs for Texas citizens for, illegal aliens. And where that hits us, the hospital district tax hits us in Texas, in our property taxes. We're being taxed out of our homes. We have these public hospital districts in our property taxes. And so that impact, the $13.4 billion, doesn't even include those public hospital costs. You're going to find that quadrupling once we start counting that.
Yes, it's astounding to watch the resistance that you see, you know, on the 101 freeway, and the resistance to Tom Homan, who doesn't need to be confirmed because he's going to be in the White House, but which Democrats would never confirm him. I would predict if he had to go through confirmation, because they don't want secure borders. And what they're basically saying is that they want to continue to see drug trafficking and American citizens be in danger, which is a hard and harsh thing to say, isn't it?
It's a harsh thing to think that any American would be okay with that, regardless of party.
Yeah.
You know, Karen, I'm old, okay? I've been doing politics over 30 years. And there was a day I worked for a Republican congressman, and the Democrat senator staff, we would all meet after work. And I was actually in a constitutional class, and we would sit over dinner and talk about the Constitution. You could have reasonable conversations with Democrats, because back in the old days, Democrats still loved America. And that's not what we're seeing today. They're perfectly fine with this invasion. And it's really heart-wrenching. I do believe that their obliviousness to this invasion and the crime and the impacts on Texans is why we took Texas back so heartily in November 2024. Yeah.
Lee, I'm sorry to have to end this conversation. I had so many more questions. How can people find you, follow you, and support you?
So my PAC that's working hard to keep Texas red is patriotmobileaction.com. They can go there. They can click the link to sign up. And we would love donations. That's how we're working to keep Texas red. And those 40 electoral votes are critical to the rest of the country.
Great. Lee Wamsgans, thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back right after this.
An engaging novel for readers aged 8 to 12 delivers a heartwarming exploration of the immigrant experience. The Partition Project by Sadia Farooqi tells the touching story of a Pakistani-American girl named Maha who forges a bond with her grandmother after learning about her difficult childhood experiences. When her grandmother from Pakistan arrives in Houston, Maha is more focused on her journalism class assignment to film a documentary. As they start talking, Maha learns about her grandmother's childhood in northern India and the partition that forced her to leave her home and relocate to the newly created Pakistan. Appalled by the continuing painful aftershocks of the partition, Maha realizes she found the topic of her documentary, author Sadia Farooqi.
The partition of India was the largest mass migration in history, and I wanted to help young readers learn about it in a relatable way. I hope this book helps readers, especially those who've been made to feel like they're from somewhere else, embrace who they are and provide a sense of belonging.
The Partition Project is now available wherever books are sold.
Chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, or COPD, is a respiratory disease that can make everyday life challenging. People living with COPD can experience chronic cough and difficulty breathing when doing daily activities, such as getting dressed in the morning, walking up the stairs, or going to work. Now, there's a new kind of treatment option available for certain patients that could help improve their ability to breathe. If you or a loved one have COPD, talk to a doctor about getting a routine blood test that measures a type of white blood cell called eosinophils and can help give insight that can guide your COPD management. Learn more at treatyourcopd.com. That's T-R-E-A-T. YOURCOPD.com. This message is courtesy of Sanofi and Regeneron.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And boy, there was a lot is going on every day. But there was a terrible tragedy, as we all know, at Reagan National Airport. When a military helicopter collided midair with a commuter plane, and Donald Trump pointed partly or all, probably partly, to the DEI that made it impossible to fully staff. Well, here we have somebody who can really talk to us more about that. Marine veteran attorney, former prosecutor, and former Republican candidate for Senate in Massachusetts who ran against Elizabeth Warren. Oh boy, John Deaton joins us right now to talk about this and other things. Hi, John. Thank you for joining us here on the Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, Karen. Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Yeah, so some people, usually the left, think it's just outrageous for Donald Trump to blame DEI for that tragedy at Reagan National Airport. Now we're finding out it's not so crazy at all, is it?
Well, listen, this is the problem. When the last administration is so hyper-focused on implementing DEI and getting away from a meritocracy where you're just based on merit, and you have FAA guidelines like, listen, if you suffer from, you know, severe mental disorders or disabilities, we want you at the air traffic controllers, and we want you in very critical jobs. And so we've learned that, and we're seeing the outcome of that. And so I think that the left has given President Trump a lot to work with in that, you know, even though we want to obviously collect all the facts in this tragedy.
Yes, well, they don't really have much of a leg to stand on, because if the air traffic controllers were not staffed properly and one person was having to guide in both of those aircraft, it sounds like a recipe for disaster, doesn't it? Give us an inside view of that if you can.
Sure. And listen, everyone has to understand, and I was in the Marines at the Air Station Yuma, Arizona, so I was in the 3rd Aircraft Wing in the Marine Corps, and I'm also a private pilot. Flying at night, you know, isn't as simple as people think, especially at low altitudes. So it's very easy to get confused from ground lights to runway lights or building lights and plane lights. And so you have a complicated airspace in one of the nation's busiest airports, and you have a congested airspace. You have one air traffic controller who is trying to coordinate, you know, these military test flights along with commercial airline aircraft. And it turns out the pilot was in a training type of exercise using allegedly night vision goggles, which gives you tunnel vision. And so there's a lot of unanswered questions. You know, the first question I always want to ask is, how many hours does the pilot have under his or her belt? It's flying. Uh-huh. And preliminary report says this pilot had less than 500. That's not ideal to be doing training exercises when you have that kind of congested airspace with commercial aircraft. Why isn't that being done elsewhere for training
exercises?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, and you pointed out that people are being treated like cogs or pegs to put in holes. You know, we have an opening for this many black people and that many Hispanic people, and no attention whatsoever, it seems, to merit. All I can say about that or point to that, and I'd love your thoughts, this is the institution, this is instituting Marxism, communism, and a whole different way of looking at people in America.
Yeah, listen, well, America became everything that it is because of you were rewarded by your talent when you coupled that talent with hard work and an incredible work ethic. And that's what a meritocracy, everyone talks about democracy, but we're founded on a meritocracy. And so, you know, my position on this is easy. When you have two equally qualified candidates and they're equally qualified for the job, and you want to consider diversity, if your customers, you know, are 40% African-American and you think, well, that's good for business and the person is equally qualified, sure. But that's not what we saw. We didn't see that kind of common sense approach to diversity. We've seen this, hey, you know, we need 35% women, we need a certain LGBTQ quota, we need a certain minority quota. When you do that type of implementation of DEI, you're going to run into disasters. And unfortunately, we're seeing it play out, whether it's the fires in California or other incidents.
John, I want to ask you whether it's really legitimate that if you have two equally qualified people, you have to take this group or that group. You know, it became out of fashion. People were called racist for suggesting that having a colorblind society is a good thing. Somehow people were called racist for that. Why should they prefer one group over another because of the group they belong to regardless? It's as if people are saying that no matter how much America tries to be colorblind, certain groups will always or should always have the upper hand. No group should have the upper hand. Why should that be?
No, it shouldn't be. And, you know, what I was saying is that in a situation, if you did, now that's a big assumption, two equally qualified people, and there was a logical business decision, you know, because of your customer base or something, that's in a business decision. And that's okay. That's common sense. But when you go to what you're describing, you're talking about a whole different ballgame. You're talking about meeting, you know, these arbitrary quotas to accommodate. Listen, I understand the point you're making. When I ran against Elizabeth Warren, she called me a racist and a xenophobe because I said that 12 million people crossing the border in 4 years is a national security risk. Right. I was called a racist for it.
Right.
So I know the point you're making, and we just got to get back to what made America great. And what made America great was a level playing field where people were rewarded for their talent and their work ethic.
John, there is one other thing. I hope I get it in. And it is that sometimes people do hire others based on subjective things. Private companies have that right. There should be a big enough pie and a big enough economy that you don't always cry racism or fatism or anything else because you didn't get the job. How do people find you or follow you, John?
Oh, I appreciate it. On X, it's John E. Deaton 1. That's the best place to find me nowadays.
I got to leave it there. Thank you so much, John, for joining us. Hope to talk to you again soon. We'll be right back with more on The Alan Nathan Show. Don't go away.
The 2025 tax season has officially begun, and many of us are hopeful for a potential, even better, a considerable tax refund. Lisa Green Lewis, a CPA and TurboTax expert, recommends the latest user-friendly services to help make that happen.
The tax deadline for most individuals is April 15th. Start by gathering all necessary documents. This year, the standard deduction is $14,600 if you're filing single and $29,200 married filing jointly, helping to reduce your taxes. Avoid common mistakes like failing to file or procrastinating. TurboTax offers done-for-you experiences with options for DIY or expert assistance at unbeatable prices. New TurboTax users can file federal and state taxes for free doing their own taxes in the mobile app until February 18th, no matter their tax complexity. And TurboTax customers may receive their federal refund up to 5 days early.
Visit TurboTax.com to learn more.
Cenex has launched the second annual Hometown Throwdown competition. The contest invites individuals and organizations to nominate their hometown festival by sharing what makes their celebrations unique. Cenex will award $150,000 to 5 qualifying festivals this year, with the grand prize winner receiving $100,000. The Hometown Throwdown competition draws inspiration from the brand's deep local roots and builds on its long history of giving back to the communities it serves. The entry period for the competition starts January 7th and runs through February 7th, 2025. To be eligible, festivals must be run by a local chamber of commerce, municipality, downtown commission, community-oriented nonprofit group, or other similar organization. Additional information about Hometown Throwdown, including entry requirements and restrictions, can be found at CenexHometownThrowdown.com. That's C-E-N-E-X, HometownThrowdown.com.
Adopt US Kids presents Multiple Choice Parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Going to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
People do some pretty cool things in their 40s and 50s. Why should saving for retirement be any different? I mean, they go back to college, learn new instruments, start skateboarding.
Whoa!
Okay, maybe that one's not for everybody, but saving for retirement is. With aceyourretirement.org, you can get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. Just have a 3-minute chat with Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach from AARP. You'll get personalized recommendations based on your input that are easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's sponsored by AARP, so you know they got your back.
Woo-hoo!
Snarly move, Dad.
Thanks, sweetie.
So wherever you are in your retirement savings journey, head to aceyourretirement.org and start chatting with Avo today. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between, it really is so special. And boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline filling in for Alan today. And boy, Trump, when does he sleep? He is now doing airstrikes against the Islamic State in Somalia. Here to unpack that, to coin a phrase, is Kenneth Abramowitz, founder of SaveTheWest.com. That's SaveTheWest.com. A website dedicated to saving Western civilization from itself. He's the author of The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. Wow, that's a lot to defend America from. Kenneth Abramowitz, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, great to be with you.
Yeah, there's a lot that America has needed defending. And now we have somebody in the White House who's actually doing it. help us understand what's going on in Somalia. And this is what, the beginning of the third week of Donald Trump's presidency, and he's ordered airstrikes against the Islamic State in Somalia.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but there's an awful lot of bad guys outside our borders and inside our borders.
Yes.
So,
we're finding that out. Yes.
That's right. Right. So the thesis of my book is that you have to go after all the bad guys simultaneously. Now, you could say, wait a minute, you know, how many bad guys are there? There's like a lot of them. And how can you do all of that simultaneously? Isn't that more? How do you maintain an America First policy and fight 87 bad guys all around the world? And so it's a real trick. And but I'm actually glad to see this happen. And the reason I'm saying this is that there's two America First. Trump hasn't properly enunciated this, but there's America First short term and America First long term. Now, as a parent or grandparent, I and others think long term because we're thinking through the kids and grandkids, great grandkids, great great grandkids. America for a short term, for example, from a politician, a typical politician, not sure, but a typical politician is what's good for me today or this week or this month or this year. And
right.
So I'm happy when this things like this happen, because if we don't stop the Al-Qaeda, ISIS, jihadis in Somalia, they'll take over all the north, then they'll go to the southern half of Africa. By the way, Africa is approximately 50%, the northern portion is Muslims, the southern portion is Christians. They'll just go down and kill all the Christians. I don't think we can
sit back. It's not as if they haven't done that before. So when people say to you, oh, that's radical, all you have to do is point to history when that has been done, right?
That's right. And so my feeling is America should make its final stand against the jihadis right now. In other words, we don't want them to take any land from anybody. We don't want them taking land from Muslims, from Christians, from anybody. And so you can't just sit back and let them kill, and then say, okay, after they kill everyone in Africa, then we're going to be doing something so they don't kill everyone in South America. So
right.
The only problem I have is that Trump should be intellectually consistent. In other words, if it's logical for America to blow up jihadis in Somalia, why can't Israelis blow up bad guys and jihadis in Gaza and in Lebanon and in Iran? He's not being intellectually consistent. I think we and our allies have to go after all bad guys everywhere.
Well, but okay, so let's look at that, because it leads kind of exactly where I wanted to go. First off, is it true, and it is true apparently, that going after terrorists in Somalia where they hang out more makes it so that you don't have to blow up large cities? I mean, I don't know the area here, but isn't it kind of going after them where they are, first off, if that makes any sense?
Sure. I mean, it's better to take care of them when they're in smaller villages or in the desert or jungle or wherever they might be, rather than wait till they take over a big city with 100,000 people and then start killing all the 100,000 people. You have to bear in mind, these people are death cults. The jihadis are a death cult. They just kill everything in their way. And so we also have a responsibility to protect Muslims from the death cults. By the way, the number one victim of Islamic jihadi death cults are Muslims. So now someone could say, wait a minute, we're America First. And where's Somalia? I don't know. It's somewhere over there. Who cares? But I care. And pretending I'm President Trump, I care. And I think it's consistent with America First.
Let's talk about the we only see a little bit about what's happening between Israel and the United States as far as negotiations. Bibi Netanyahu is coming here to meet with President Trump this week, we hear. I have a lot of friends who are a little worried because they think Trump is pressuring Israel. This wasn't true in the first administration. I have a wait and see attitude because I think it is so huge an issue that there's a lot going on behind the scenes that we don't see. What say you on that question?
Yes, when you have negotiations between a good guy and a bad guy, in other words, between an ally and an enemy, you want your ally to win and you want your enemy to lose, right? It's not complicated stuff. Now, when you get into negotiations with bad guys, and I'm not a fan of negotiating with bad guys, but when you're in negotiations, the bad guys always say, no, 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 I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that. And so what happens is it's just natural that you end up pressuring the ally because the ally is your friend. And you say to the ally, please, will you make this concession? Please, 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 that concession. And what we don't understand, we the good guys don't understand, is every time you ask an ally good guy to give a concession, you whet the appetite of the bad guys. You actually make things worse. So my feeling is let's get the bad guys to make concessions, not the good guys.
Well, I've heard it said that the treaty that was made to bring home some of the Israeli hostages, it was made with the knowledge that the bad guys were going to break the ceasefire anyway. They always do. So they decided they decided to get as many hostages out as they could, knowing full well that they would break the treaty. Does that, you know, that's a tough one, but that's just an example of how complex and multifaceted it is in the Middle East. What do you think?
Yes, well, that's why I don't like to negotiate with bad guys, because they never deliver their part of the bargain. And you, the good guys, we feel obliged to meet our part of the bargain, and that's no way to negotiate. The way to negotiate with bad guys is you basically say, this is what you – it's like negotiating with a lion. Pretend a lion escaped from the zoo and speaks English. You don't listen to the lion. The lion says, oh, here, I'm in your studio. No, I'm hungry. I want to eat you. Let's negotiate, you know. No, you, Mr. Lion, you're going to your cage, and here I have a whip and a gun and a knife,
I'm not negotiating. It's an excellent analogy. What we've been watching this for well over, when going on 2 years at least, I guess it is going on 2 years. There's a lot of pressure in Israel. There has been all along. Bring home the hostages. Who could blame them for saying that? But when you, and I'm not disagreeing with you, just wondering what you were saying when there's pressure within Israel to bring home the hostages, but those of us who understand the bad guys that we're dealing with, what do you do in that case? It's a very difficult position that Netanyahu has been in, because it was clear that he wanted to get rid of, once and for all, Hamas and Hezbollah.
No, you're getting to the crux of the problem. When you're a leader of a democracy, you have to listen to the will of the people, sometimes even if the will is wrong. In other words, what the people are saying is, release our hostages, our family, our friends. And then the Israeli government is saying, I can do that by surrendering. Do you want me to surrender to the bad guys?
Right.
The hostage families never said this, but in effect, they said yes. Surrender to the bad guys. Get my father out or my son out. And then some other day you can go after the bad guys after my family is home. They're not irrational. It's a logical request.
Kind of like not in my backyard. I get it.
Right. That's right.
I wish we had more time. Kenneth Abramowitz. Can they find you at SaveTheWest.com?
That's right, SaveTheWest.com.
Sign up.
Get my newsletter.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, Ken. Take care. Thanks for joining us. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back with our final guest of this hour, Don't go away. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show here on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
If you're like most people, there's no telling how far you'll go for the promise of a post-holiday getaway to a land of sunshine. Emily Kaufman, a.k.a. The Travel Mom, can help.
Finding a location that offers a bit of magic for everyone is the key to an unforgettable stay. That's what I love about Disney Vacation Club resorts. They give members and guests the opportunity to stay within the magic while enjoying the comforts of home. Members and guests vacationing at a Disney Vacation Club resort can choose to stay in a variety of different accommodations, including deluxe studios, one-bedroom villas, two-bedroom villas, and even three-bedroom grand villas at most locations. Members can choose from exciting vacation destinations like the brand new Island Tower at Disney's Polynesian Villas and Bungalows. That's right in the heart of the magic of Walt Disney World. It's inspired by the spirit of the Polynesian Islands, the Walt Disney Animation Studios film Moana, and the beauty of the natural world.
For more information or to plan your next Walt Disney World vacation, visit DisneyVacationClub.com.
Vaccination rates for COVID-19 and flu are lagging this year, causing concern for many families as infection rates continue to rise. William Schaffner, MD, spokesperson for the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases, or NFID, has more.
Most people in the U.S. likely have at least one high risk factor for COVID-19 and flu, but many don't know they have a greater chance of developing severe illness if infected. People with chronic health issues such as diabetes, hypertension, and heart and lung disease are at increased risk for serious complications.
Research shows antivirals can reduce the risk of hospitalization for both COVID-19 and flu.
Although COVID-19 and flu antiviral treatments are effective in reducing the risk of hospitalization and death, they're widely underused. Antivirals are available with a prescription and are designed to be given early on to prevent symptoms from becoming more severe.
For more information, visit cveep.org/treatments and nfid.org.
With peak carbine season coming up, one thing you want to think about is how does that affect your insurance? So a couple recommendations we have is make sure you're always reviewing your policy. Whether you're adding a new vehicle, adding a driver, or just updating your coverage overall, you want to make sure that you're reviewing your coverage and the price. One way to do that is to consult an independent agent because they can help you navigate the tricky insurance buying process. The second thing is how do you become more insurance savvy? So a couple recommendations we have is to understand some of the basic terms. The first one is deductible. That's the amount of coverage that you pay before your coverage kicks in. And it's important to keep in mind that the higher deductible you take, the lower your premium is. But remember, if you do have a claim, that's the amount that you're going to be paying. So you want to make sure it fits within your budget. The second term is premium, and that's what you pay for the coverage that you're getting. One way to find an independent agent is to go to agent.travelers.com and find a local agent near you.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And we have a great guest to talk about, to further our discussion about Iran and the Middle East. His name is Alireza Jafarzadeh, and he is Deputy Director of the Washington Office of the National Council of Resistance of Iran. What a name! NCRI. He is the author of The Iran Threat. Alireza, thank you so much for joining us here on The Alan Nathan Show.
Thank you so much, Karen. Always a pleasure to be on this show. And as you said, what a name, because Iran will be free. And we want the world to know that Iran is not identified by its repressive rulers, rather by its very vibrant population who are settling for nothing but a freedom, seeking a free, democratic, secular, non-nuclear republic, Iran. Thank you so much.
Gosh. Oh, yeah. It's amazing that it became clear, I think, with what Israel did in the last, 2 months before we had, thankfully, a new president in this country, that Iran seemed not to be quite as organized or powerful. Sure, they're a terrible threat, but they were using proxies and continue to, and even their own people do not support them. Is that accurate?
Absolutely accurate, Karen, in terms of the people of Iran not supporting the regime, but also about their weakness in the region. Since 2018, we have had 9 major rounds of uprisings in Iran in all 31 provinces of the country. Large numbers of people risking their lives, chanting slogans, death to the dictator, be it the Shah or the supreme leader, rejecting, the previous dictatorship of the monarchy, but also the current theocracy. And they want freedom. They want republic. And actually, it was the weakness inside Iran that prompted the regime to test its chances in the region, trying to see how they can export the crisis outside of Iran. And October 7, 2023, actually came as a result of Tehran trying to use its proxies that they had invested so heavily over the years. But the whole thing backfired on them because the regime couldn't keep its allies in power, Hezbollah in Lebanon, and, were being basically decimated. And most recently, the Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad, who was the biggest ally of the Iran regime in the region, which Tehran had spent about 100,000 of its forces, proxies, and over $50 billion to keep Assad in power. They couldn't. So they have received major blows, and now the Ayatollahs are facing the prospect of their own downfall. If their proxy Assad could be seen by the whole world that the way, in 11 days the whole thing crumbled, that same situation can happen to the Ayatollahs in Iran, especially since because they are the epicenter of, terror and chaos in the region.
Well, let's cut to the chase because our segments are so short. And boy, I got lots of questions. But cutting to the chase, what do you think is the best way to do that? Just as an aside, I knew we were in trouble when POTUS-44 tried to put down the rebellion against its own Iranians to actually side with the terrorists. I remember this, and I'll never forget it. We were for the people in Tiananmen Square, and somehow we had a regime that was on the side of tyranny. I'll never forget it. So what is the best way to free the people? Because that's what will bring peace to the region. Free people will bring peace.
Absolutely, Karen. You know, the people of Iran are very organized. There is an organized resistance movement going on for over 44 years, and they have paid a huge price. Over 100,000 members and supporters of this movement have been killed by the regime. But because they are so focused and committed to establishing freedom and democracy and a secular government, they have, you know, gotten so powerful now. They have women heavily involved. The leadership of the movement is actually led by women. The top woman, Mrs. Maryam Rajavi, she's the president-elect of the Parliament in Exile. She has introduced a 10-point plan for the future of Iran that is based on the ballot box as the only criteria for legitimacy, separation of religion and state, gender equality, freedom of religion, free market economy, supporting peace in the Middle East, and a non-nuclear republic, Iran. That platform has been supported by a House majority from both sides of the aisle, significant Senate support, over 4,000 parliamentarians around the world. They have a network inside Iran that are exposing all the major nuclear sites of Iran, and they're in the forefront of the opposition against the regime. They have these what they call resistance units who are confronting the Revolutionary Guards. The policy of the U.S. and Europe should be, you've got to side with this movement, with those who are on the ground fighting and are confronting the regime, because the future belongs to them, not the dying Ayatollahs. And look at the outcome of the past 40 years, that every concession given to the Iran regime actually backfired. It further empowered the Revolutionary Guards. It further empowered their proxies. It weakened the population, the protesters, the organized opposition. That's why that needs to be reversed. There's no need to have boots on the ground or even appropriating money. You just need to have to adopt the right policy to know who your allies are and who your enemies are. And that's what Congress is talking about. And that's why I think there's a whole new opportunity, both here in Washington, but also in capitals in Europe.
Boy, it's really quite encouraging. It couldn't be any more. It couldn't be any better than for the people of Iran to finally see freedom. I think that's true in other regions in the Middle East, because these terrorist countries never believe in freedom. You can't have freedom and terrorism and Islamofascism all in the same breath. The question, though, is there's always this vacuum of power, like we had with the Shah and then moving into the Ayatollahs. Oh gosh, we don't have enough time. I don't think you have time to answer that. How can people find you, follow you, and we'll learn more, try to have you back?
Yes, I'm on social media at NCRIUS. We also have a website, www.ncrius.org. And, we're very active. Just follow us, engage us.
Okay. And, thank you so much. I got to run. We got to take a break. We'll be back with another hour of the Ellen Nathan Show here on the Main Street Radio Network.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.